At the last church I was at, we used to do quite a lot of raising money for different people. And one of the things that we did with our young people one time was a 24-hour famine. I don't know whether anyone's ever done one of those, where basically, as is described, you don't eat for 24 hours to raise money for other people. And so we decided that our youth group would do this, but we wouldn't just not eat for 24 hours, we'd also all be together for 24 hours in the church doing lots of different activities to encourage us not to eat and to think about why we were doing what we were doing and to raise money. And so we all met at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, having had a big hearty breakfast, which I'm sure was the point, and ready for our 24 hours of non-eating. We were allowed to have fruit teas as a concession, but you know, we didn't eat. And so we started off with great enthusiasm. First of all, we went out litter picking. I don't know why now, but I feel it was something we felt we should do together. Everyone was very excited. Everyone was on a high. We're going to spend 24 hours together, and it'd be very exciting. And then we progressed to team games, team building. Wonderful. Everyone was still excited. We had a DVD with a point on the end to try and infuse us in our fundraising. And then we had discussions and little group games. As we started to get into the afternoon, however, our enthusiasm started to wane, and we became a little less excited about the prospect of not eating for 24 hours. Partway through the afternoon, I found some Twix wrappers down the side of a chair. Clearly, some of us had not succeeded. As we got to night time, and we were all getting down to sleep, it was awful. Everyone was hungry. And you know, when you're trying to get to sleep and you're hungry, well, it doesn't work, does it? You spend the time thinking of food. And as I lay on the church floor, trying to sleep, hearing the noise of everyone around me, I don't mind telling you that I was ready to give up. If someone had offered me a morsel of food, I would have taken it, lied to the young people, and just pretended that I'd not eaten. I have to say it now, because I was so hungry. And you know, as time went on, I eventually went to sleep, but my dreams were filled with plates of exotic cuisine, all the more tempting. Now, fortunately, I did last the 24 hours. But I have to say that as time went on, as I reached the halfway point and moved towards the end, it became increasingly harder. Temptation, discouragement, and a distinct desire to give up and go home overtook me. And you know, similarly, here in the book of Nehemiah, as we hit chapter 4, and we find that the walls of Jerusalem have reached half their height, that the people of Israel have already faced opposition from around them, that the workers have been away from their homes for quite some time now, we find that things have begun to get tough. Life has begun to get progressively harder. The people of God are finding it very difficult to complete the task that they started. And you know, I guess if we think about it, this is really no surprise. Or at least it shouldn't be. Because as they're halfway there, the Bible tells us that right from the beginning, despite all, the people have worked with all their hearts. From the off, they've been enthusiastic, they've been dedicated, they've been passionate. At first, of course, this was because they're excited by the word that Nehemiah brought them. This call to rebuild their city, to protect their land. It was a new initiative. It was an exciting initiative. It was a word from the Lord that they hadn't heard for so long. And so, as we've read over the weeks, they gathered together, these people, young and old, families and individuals, skilled and unskilled, priests and people, the remnant of God, gathered together to begin this task which he had set before them. And their excitement increased as they began their work. After all, Nehemiah had organized them well. He got favour with the king. He provided all the resources. He'd given each group their own section of wall to work on. They were empowered, and they set about their task with great enthusiasm. Of course, as you heard last week from Paul, there was the odd bit of trouble along the way, namely an attempt by Sanballat and Tobiah to derail this wonderful work. But the people of Israel weren't to be deterred. They didn't give in. Instead, they continued, focused and determined, ready to complete the wall of Jerusalem and once more defend the city of God. Things had been going really, really well. But now, of course, we've reached the halfway point. That notorious difficult time in any project, when you're way past the point of going back, but you're actually nowhere near the end. And suddenly, we see the people of God changing. This group of believers, who had been so determined and so passionate just a few verses before, are suddenly very different. So much so that almost within the blink of an eye, they seem to have lost all that drove them at the beginning of the book. They've lost all their energy. They've lost all their enthusiasm. They've lost all their passion. They've lost all their determination. They've lost all their dedication. They've lost all the excitement that they had. Everything that had kept them focused on this task has gone. To the point that they eventually turn to Nehemiah in this passage and they say, "The strength of the labourers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." We cannot rebuild the wall. These people, who only a few verses before had battled opposition, had been determined to protect their city, had been happy to leave their homes, these people who had wanted the walls completed, suddenly turn around and declare this task that God has given them to be impossible. We can't do it. It seems to me a strange thing to do within such a short period of time. Enthusiasm to defeat within a few verses. But I guess as we look at the passage, we might say, well, actually, it's quite understandable in a way. There's good reason. I mean, not only have they reached the halfway point, which is difficult, but also things aren't exactly going smoothly around this time. Because after their first attempt to derail this project, we now have another attempt by Sanballat and Tobiah. And this time, they haven't come alone. This time, they're accompanied by others. The Arabs, the Amorites, and the people of Ashdod. Which is actually quite significant. Because in effect, when all of these people join together against the Israelites, it means that the people of God are surrounded on all sides, surrounded by their enemies, those who dislike the rebuilding, those who want the walls to stop, those who hate what God is doing. So when word of an impending attack comes from all these people that surround them, it's not surprising that the Israelites are terrified. And the reason they're terrified is not just because they're surrounded, although that's not great, but also because this situation of enemies surrounding them and wanting them to stop the work of God, had actually happened before. It had happened to their ancestors in the book of Ezra. That as they too had embarked on rebuilding the temple of Jerusalem, they too had been forced to stop by enemies who had gathered against them, surrounded them, and forced them to stop the work. And so here in the book of Nehemiah, as the people of God face an identical situation, almost, to that of their ancestors, they knew that if those before them couldn't stop the attacks and carry on work, then neither could they. After all, they're already about to give up. They're at the halfway point. Their energies have waned. Their enthusiasm has diminished. Their determination has dropped off. And now they have enemies to face. Enemies that surround them. How could they possibly continue under these circumstances? When looking at this passage, there is certainly good reason for this sudden desire to give in and go home. And yet, when Nehemiah hears
the pleas of the people of God
and sees the situation that now faces them, his reaction is completely different.
Because instead of becoming overwhelmed by everything and wanting to throw in the towel with everyone else, turning around and saying, okay, that didn't work, let's go home, he decides to put in place a number of measures. He decides to do something to make the situation better. Firstly, as is his way, and of course what we would expect, he leads them in prayer, asking God to protect them. And then he puts into place measures to enable the people of God not to go home or give up, but to continue this work despite the attack, despite the lethargy. For instance, he stations guards at different points to watch over the work they're doing, to protect them. He then arms each family with weapons. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Here, son, have a knife. He then splits the workforce in two. One is going to guard everyone else, and the other will continue to build the walls. He then equips each worker who's continuing to build the walls with a weapon. So they've got work in one hand and a weapon in the other. And finally, he calls all the people to stay together at night, to camp inside the walls so that they aren't left alone on their way home, or they don't desert because they feel they can't cope. In fact, it seems the more afraid and disheartened the Israelites become, the more determined and organized Nehemiah is, so that the work of God can be completed. Do you know, in some weird way, it sort of reminds me of when Simon and I go walking. We like to go walking. We haven't been for a while, but we like to go, especially in the Lake District, up the mountains. And we set off with great enthusiasm. Rucksack, boots, everything on, walking along. And invariably, partway through, I become disheartened. It's hard. It's high. The rucksack's heavy. I can't help it. And I start, I'm afraid, to moan. I moan, I walk, I moan, I walk, I moan, I walk. And it seems that, you know, the more I moan, the more determined Simon becomes that we're going to complete this walk. I should learn, really, shouldn't I? Smile the whole time. I moan and moan, and Simon's determined. Map out, marching on. Come on, Kate! I'm like, oh, no, it's such a... And out he comes. Energy bars. Have one of these, it'll make you better. These little gel things that you suck down. Gives you energy, apparently. Chocolate bars. Anything. We'll have a little rest. But we have to complete it. Moan, 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 determined he is. And eventually, we finish the walk. I have to say I'm quite pleased at the end of it. But you know, the reason that Simon pushes me is not because he wants me to go through pain, although maybe I should check that. And it's not because he finds it funny that I moan, although maybe he does at some points. But rather, it's because this is something that we've set out on together. And so this is something that we need to complete together. I mean, it would be all the more worse, really, if he left me and he came back and you never saw me again because I was halfway up a mountain, wouldn't it? He wants us to complete it. Oh, I don't know. Would it be worse? I don't know. He just didn't reply. He wants me to complete it with him. And you see, the thing here in this passage is that the reason Nehemiah is so determined to complete the task, the reason he becomes more determined as the situation becomes worse, the reason he puts into place these measures to help the people of God finish, is not because he can't stand to give up. It's not because he has this innate desire to finish no matter what. But rather, it's because that he knows that this is the life that God has called him to. This is what God has called him to do. And not only that, but he also knows that this is the life that God has called his people to live as well. And so when he puts these measures in place, when he arms the people and tells them to continue working, it's not just so they can withstand the opposition. It's also to remind the people of God who they are and why they are doing this whole thing in the first place. I mean, look at the language that he uses when he encourages them. He says, "Don't be afraid. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." This is not just any language he's using. This is language which rings bells with the people. This is language that means something. If you look in the Bible, this is language that Moses used in the book of Exodus as the people were leaving Egypt. This is language that Joshua used when he was taking the promised land for God. This is language that Gideon used when he defeated the Midianites. This is language that is littered throughout story upon story in the Old Testament, where the people of Israel are in difficult situations. You see, when Nehemiah is faced with this discouraging situation at the walls of Jerusalem, when he's faced with the disheartened people who are ready to give up, he doesn't try and bully them into finishing or walk away. Instead, he organizes them in such a way and uses language that is so poignant that the people of God will remember. That the people of God will remember who they are. They will remember who they follow. And they will remember what it is they are actually doing. Or if you like, Nehemiah does this so that the people of God will remember the context in which they have promised to live. And you know, today, as we too seek to be the church of God in our world, today as we seek to build God's kingdom in this place, it's vitally important that we take hold of the words of Nehemiah too. It's vitally important that we continue to remember the context in which we have been called to live. You know, to remember who we are, to remember who we worship, to remember what it is we're doing here at this time. Because, you know, even though we're not surrounded by an aggressive enemy as such, and even though we're not partway through a tangible project like building a wall, it's still so easy for us in following God today to become disheartened. It's still so easy for us in following God today to feel like we just want to give up. You know, it's all too easy to feel our energies wane, isn't it? It's all too easy to feel our enthusiasm diminish. It's all too easy to feel our determination drop off. Until we begin to wonder why on earth we are here and what on earth it is we are doing in the first place. Do you know, there's a famous story that's told in lots of different ways about Christopher Wren, who designed St. Paul's Cathedral, you probably knew that, and who went round checking on how the building work was going and finding out how the workers were, whether people were happy, and how the building was progressing. And he writes in his diary about a visit that he made to the cathedral as it was in its early stages. And he would go round and he would look at the different workers and he would see whether they looked happy or unhappy. And those who looked unhappy, like they were struggling through the project and it was hard work, he'd go up to them and he'd say, "What are you doing? What is it that you're doing?" And they'd say, "Well, I'm laying bricks, or I'm carrying stones, or I'm fixing this section of wall here." And he'd move round. And then he'd go up to workers who looked happy, enthusiastic, excited about what they were doing. And he'd say, "What are you doing? What is it that you're doing?" And they would turn to him and they would reply, "I'm building a cathedral. I'm building a cathedral." And you know, the thing is, when we follow God, when we give our lives to him, he calls us to live for him. He
He gives us a context in which to live our lives. And you know, that doesn't mean that life's going to be easy. In fact, normally the opposite. And it doesn't mean that we won't have to do anything we dislike. But it does mean that everything we do in this wider context. And therefore our lives have real purpose to them. For instance, you know, if we're running creche, we're not just running creche. We're showing the love of Jesus to the children in the creche. We're not just running something to make it happen. If we're helping someone, we're not just helping them take rubbish to the tip, but we're demonstrating service and love and sacrifice to someone. If we're sitting listening to someone who's lonely, we're not just listening to their words, but we're sharing God's love with someone who might not see it normally. You see, when we live our lives in the right context, the context of God and the sacrifice that Jesus made, we don't just choose to do an odd job here or an odd job there. We don't just run a building. We're not just making a church work. We're choosing to be the people of God in everything we do, wherever we are, whatever we are doing, whatever circumstances present themselves before us. And you know, the thing is, when we really take hold of this and we remember it, I can guarantee that we will be willing as a people here in Cottenham to go through almost anything, because we'll be building the kingdom of God where we are. Let's pray together.